I've got a couple of questions for you in the Eurovision world. Number one, did you get tickets when the final batch went on sale? Are you going to be going to Liverpool in just a couple of weeks' time? And number two, have you 100% chosen your favourite artist and song yet? Or are you still making up your mind? Are you waiting to see them on stage? Or are you convinced, no, this is the one I like? And number three, has Belgium's Gustav picked his hat for Eurovision yet? It's been on my mind. I'm thinking he probably has, knowing Gustav. Also, I hope you've been watching Eurovision a little bit more on the official Eurovision YouTube channel. It's remixes, acoustic versions, covers of different songs by this year's class of 2023. Two episodes are already out. There's one more to come. And it's a chance to show the artists in a different light and really shows off their talent. They are such an incredible bunch. And for us here at the podcast, it's another double episode week, getting to know all of this year's artists. And in an ABBA style, we've got two men and two women. Coming up, we've got the United Kingdom's Mae Muller on performing in her home country. We have Brunette joining us from Armenia. And then the two guys who possibly have the deepest voices in this year's contest. Joining from Greece, it's 16-year-old Victor Vernikos. And from Germany, it's the lead singer of Lord of the Lost, Blood and Glitter himself, Chris Harms, is here. So let's get to it, and let's begin with Mae.
You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
By now, you will know that Mae Muller is the little girl from the Mika Grace Kelly video, but now is this amazing artist in her own right. She has a great sense of humour, she is enjoying Eurovision, and she will fly the flag for the United Kingdom at a home contest. I Wrote a Song is the song. She will perform it in Liverpool, and she'll follow in the footsteps of Sam Ryder and his triumphant performance, which jump-started the UK's fortunes at Eurovision. And as you're about to hear, she is just as funny and charming as you would hope. A very good day to the United Kingdom's representative, Mae Muller. Mae, you've just had a lovely weekend off, but now you are in the finishing straight, in the home straight for Eurovision. How are you feeling?
I honestly, it's so surreal that I'm like, where has the time gone? Like, we're literally like just over 2 weeks away now. And I'm like, how has that happened? But I'm feeling really excited now. I'm kind of feeling like, I don't want to wish the time away, but I'm like, I just want to get there. Like, I just want to do it now.
Loads of people listening to this would say that you have been one of the stars of social media of this year's class of 2023 on the pre-party trail. It looks like you have been having loads of fun. How was it?
Honestly, I mean, exactly that. I've literally just been having the best time. I feel like it's such a surreal experience that it's so different to anything else. And people are like, oh, you know, it's like tour, but it's not like tour. It's like nothing like I've ever done before, but it's been really fun. And like being on social media and being able to like chat to people, and it's kind of actually really helped me as well, because it is a journey and there are ups and downs, which is completely normal. But I think just being able to like connect with people and just kind of that's really, really helped me as well, and like pushed me, and it kind of highlights like the fun of it as well. So I've been having a great time.
And not just connecting with fans, but connecting with all your fellow now friends, I guess. You know, what's that been like?
Your Eurovision family. Honestly, it's so lovely. I keep on saying, obviously, we all want to do well. And, you know, we've all been working really hard. But it's like, I kind of forget that it's a competition when I'm with everyone, because everyone's just so supportive, which I think is like the best. That I'm so happy that it is like that, because everyone just wants to see each other do well. And like the talent is so insane. So it's just, I think the energy is just like, oh my, I've been fangirling everyone. When I'm with the other contestants, like I'm not really like seeing them as competition. It's just like, we're all mates, which is really nice.
I think that's better, to be honest, you know?
So much better, especially in the music industry, especially as a woman, like you're constantly put up against your peers and other women in the industry. And I think it's just always feels like there's just this like competitiveness, which is just set up for you. So I think there's enough of that already. And we've all dealt with enough of that in this like whirlwind. We can at least like kind of leave that at the door and just like support each other through it, because it makes the experience so much more enjoyable, I think.
One of my favourite things so far from all the pre-parties, we briefly shared a lift, me and you, and the doors opened and Blanca Paloma was there, and no words were said, just screams.
We just screeched. I remember that. That was such a perfect moment. It was like a movie, like literally like the lift opened and we both just went, just pointed at each other, and we were kind of, you know, just kind of squealing at it, just fangirling each other. But it was so nice. And I think those are the moments that really count. Like, it's not rehearsed. It's not set up. It's just two people being like, oh my gosh, which, and it feels really, it's really nice, I think.
Who's been the funniest?
I think Joker Out are a good laugh. Blanca Paloma's hilarious. Loreen is hilarious. You know, when I got to spend some real time with her, like I didn't really know what to expect. You know, I thought she was going to be lovely, but you don't know. And she was so funny, very like witty and like quite dry humor, which I like.
Any wild moments?
Oh my God, I'm such a grandma. I'm literally like, after my show, I'm like, I'm so tired, I've got to go to bed. But wild moments. I need to like do something crazy. I haven't quite decided what yet, but.
something to surprise everybody.
I think Cardia is quite, I think I could do something quite fun with him. Maybe like for like a performance, maybe just get on his shoulders or something and just be like.
Well, he's very strong.
That's what I'm saying. He looks quite strong. I feel like he'd be down, you know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You could do a Eurovision totem. Couldn't yes. you? So it could be maybe Boyan from Joker Out, Kalia, and then you on the top.
I'm here for that. Okay. Let's make that happen.
Eurovision totem, without a doubt. I'm just wanting to rewind to the moment that you found out you'd be the UK's representative at Eurovision. Where were you?
So there was sort of like two moments. The first moment was in January when it was like first put on the table to me. Because my manager was like, come, like, have a coffee. And because I didn't know what he was gonna say, and I was like, a spontaneous coffee, what do you want?
Yeah, so it was a bit like suspicious.
Yeah, a bit suspicious. Yeah. So that moment I had to like take in all this information in such a short period of time, and I was just like, I like straight away I was like, yes. But then I sometimes get a bit of like self-doubt, a bit of imposter syndrome. So initially I was like, can I do this? Like, am I able? Like, can I represent my country? Like da 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 da. And then once I like put all those voices aside, I was like, babes, you can't say no to this. Like, this is too much of an insane opportunity. So that was sort of like my first initial reaction. But then it was like not until like a month and a half later where I got the call where it was like, it's happening. It's like, you. It's you. And I remember I was sat on my sofa and I remember I just started screaming. Like, and I was sort of like on my own, like, oh my God. And then I think I just had a glass of wine afterwards. Quite a quiet celebration, but it was fun.
What's incredible for the UK is the week of Eurovision. The whole country is having this manic week because the weekend before it's the King's coronation and then it's the Eurovision Song Contest. Nice. You might get to meet the King, right?
Yes, I might get to meet the King. I'm not, you know, you never know what can happen, but I think it could, yeah, I don't, I mean, what does one do? I have to, I know I have to like curtsy, right?
Probably.
I'm going through all the things in my head. I'm like, I've watched enough episodes of The Crown, like I should know, but I'm like, I wasn't expecting to meet, I don't know,
royalty.
Family. Royalty, I know. I'm like, what do I wear?
It adds to the surreal nature that you started in January not knowing that any of this would happen, and suddenly it's going to be one of the biggest things that the UK experiences, and it's you on home turf.
The fact that it's in the UK, the fact that we're hosting, the fact that I'm going last, like all this stuff, which is kind of terrifying. I'm just taking it as like, that's just going to add to the excitement, you know? It's just going to be even more of a moment. Everything feels very like magnified, but it's exciting.
So I've got a little quiz for you, because over the last 6 weeks, you have been around your fellow Eurovision competitors. Yeah. You've got to know them. Question one, which six artists have appeared at Eurovision before? So this is not their first time at the rodeo.
Loreen.
Tick.
Monica.
Tick.
Blanca's not done it before. Oh my God, this is so annoying.
Pasha from Moldova.
Pasha. Oh, so he's done it before.
He did the same year as Loreen, 2012.
Oh my gosh, that's like an iconic year. Pasha, Loreen, Monica. Yeah.
Should I tell you?
Yeah.
So Marco Mengoni for Italy did it in 2013.
Oh, yes, yes. He's this like mystery man to me.
He is. Well,
I'm like, where are you at? I want to hang out. Like, what's the deal?
He's going to emerge soon. Gustav from Belgium was a backing singer.
Oh, no way. Oh, I think I knew that. I didn't know that. Oh, my God, he's one of my favourites.
He's so lovely.
I love Gustav. He was the first contestant I met in Barcelona. We walked in and he was just to the left of me, and I sort of looked at him and I was like, oh my gosh. So he was the first guy, he was the first one I met.
A hat icon as well.
He knows how to rock a hat for sure.
And the final one is Iru from Georgia, because she won the Junior Eurovision Song Contest.
You learn something new every day.
This is a little fact-finding trivia like fest as well, okay? So that was there, the six. Which singer decided to enter this year's Eurovision after a drunken night out in London?
I don't know this, but I'm just going to try and think of who it would be.
So the story goes, this singer was out in a bar in London about November time, and she got chatting to this singer and they talked about Eurovision, and she said, should I just go for it? Should I try and go again?
Monica?
Correct!
Yes! Oh my God!
It was Monica Linkita.
Oh my God, I love that. Yeah. She's even more of an icon now.
And now the girl that she said that to is one of her backing singers on stage, Nicola.
Oh my God, stop. That's iconic. It's good, isn't it? God, I love that. I didn't know that. That's such a good story.
Who has just released a single with British singing legend Elvis Costello?
I know this. Joker out.
Correct.
Yes.
The singer for which country also has another job in the day as a lawyer?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
It's Danny, the lead singer of Voyager. He is also a human rights lawyer.
Stop. Oh my God, I literally love Voyager. They are so iconic. That's just made me love them even more.
This is good. I feel like I'm like telling you lots here.
No, I'm like, this is great tea. I love it.
Who has a lobster called Salvador?
Luke Black.
Correct.
Yes.
Kadia has a tattoo on his chest. Do you know who that is in honour of?
Oh, I don't know. I need to look at his chest more often, obviously. I haven't been paying enough attention.
It is of Rammstein. It's his favourite band, who he's seen more than anybody else. Who has a sister? Final question. This is the obscure one. Who has a sister who was one of the professional dancers on the Irish version of Dancing with the Stars?
So a sister who's an amazing dancer. Let me have a think. I'm going to guess. Luke Black.
It's Alika from Estonia.
Really? Yeah. Alika. We've like met in passing, but I actually like spoke to her on Zoom recently. She's amazing. And her voice is insane.
She told the podcast she is a massive fan of like prog rock and heavy metal from the 70s and 80s.
That just makes her so like even more like cool. Like she couldn't get any cooler, but then she just did.
Can we just very quickly say, before we finish, like this just proves what a bunch of amazingly talented people. It's like, it's what I love about Eurovision. Everybody has their own story. And when everyone comes together, it's like all their powers combine and you just get the best atmosphere and the most talent.
No, honestly, I've said this like from the very beginning, like the talent this year, it just feels very like special, and I feel like everyone brings something so different, but they're so like unique, and like all the songs are amazing. I feel like everyone has such an a great shot to just do really, really well. Like I think it just feels very exciting, and it feels like it's a huge honor for me to be part of like such an exciting year. I feel like I honestly, and it's one of those years like I have no idea how it's gonna go because everyone's so good. So I'm like, gosh, like not everyone can win.
I wish they could.
I know, same. That would be fun, wouldn't it? No, but it does. It feels very, very exciting.
Mae Muller, you wrote a song and now you're representing United Kingdom at the Eurovision Song Contest.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
There you go. That is Mae Muller, a lovely person. You can't help but smile when you're around her. A great ambassador for the United Kingdom at her own home Eurovision. And let's see if she ends up meeting King Charles. As promised, it's the first of two Deep Voice Men now. We are heading to Greece to meet the youngest artist in this year's contest. Victor Vernikos is 16 years old and wrote his song, What They Say, when he was just 14. He's Greece's youngest ever entrant, but as you're about to hear, has incredible maturity. Here he is. It's Victor Vernikos. Victor, how are you doing right now? Are you currently in Athens? Are you still at home at the minute?
I'm doing good. Yes. Unfortunately, we are still in Athens. Not that it's not nice here. It's beautiful out here, but I'm aching to get to Liverpool.
Aching to get to Liverpool?
Yes, sir.
Is it because it's just felt like the longest build up? Like, how much work has gone into this?
As much as humanly possible. I'm that type of person. I want to make sure that the staging and the way that the song is presented is just outdoes anything that's ever been heard just off of Spotify or anything. I want to really give a surprise to all the fans and everybody.
This is a song that is very special to you. You wrote it, and you wrote it a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah. I wrote it when I was 14, basically the first time I ever felt a real anxiety. And that anxiety came from realizing that my dreams could actually be fulfilled. And that was quite overwhelming for a 14-year-old, 13-year-old to like take in. So, and I always write about the experiences that I have, and that it's just my form of expression. So I kept that experience in my head. I remember for 6 months until I wrote it, which is quite a long time for me in general for writing music, because I usually write it on the spot. I remember holding that experience in high regard as something I really, really wanted to express.
It's very mature of you as well to have to be able to know what that feeling was of anxiety and to turn it into something creative.
I thought it was anxiety. Like, I'd never experienced something like it before. I'd never felt that for some reason. It had weirded me out, and I was like, I want to explain how I felt. Turned it into a song, and gladly. I mean, as always, the songs you write that are honest and that are vulnerable and come from real experiences are usually the ones which are the best.
What kind of writer are you? Because you just mentioned that you normally do things on the spot. So do the words and the lyrics come quite, do they flow quite freely?
They flow quite freely. It's never one or the other. It's never, I'm going to start with the lyrics, or I'm going to start with the melody, or I'm going to start with this. It's always an emotion. Like when I sit down to songwrite, I'm like, what am I feeling right now? I just pick up a guitar, see what comes out, or say, I'm going to write a song.
Was the guitar the first instrument you picked up, or was it something else?
No, it was a piano. At 4 years old. 4 years old, I started taking lessons with piano. I mean, we always had a piano in the house. I mean, I remember myself at three years old, just hitting the piano keys before I ever learned what to play. So I started piano at 4, and then guitar at 10. Music, I did a year of music production at 11, but I've most of the stuff I've done music production wise, I'm self-taught. I believe that the more you do something, just the better you get, and I think that applies to songwriting and singing and production as well. So yeah, and I started vocal lessons at 8.
There's never been a time in your life when music has not been involved, from the sounds of it, from when you can remember.
No, never. I can't imagine my life without music. My father grew me up on soul, funk, jazz, and blues, and all that stuff, which is absolutely amazing. Gets my goosebumps going every time I listen. But there are so many genres that and artists that I could look up to. I mean, John Mayer is one. Ed Sheeran used to be a big one for me. He was the only person that I've ever seen live performance in Odense in Denmark when I'd been traveling with my father, because my father's Danish, my mother's Greek. We're all music lovers. I think everybody who watches Eurovision is a music lover. And I think whoever is not a music lover to start off with, once they watch Eurovision, they are.
And Greece has a brilliant long line of amazing artists at Eurovision, from, you know, the 2000s when Helena Paparazzou won to Amanda doing something last year that was something a bit different for Greece as well. Did you watch last year's contest?
I was rooting for Amanda the whole way. She's really, really, truly a great artist. I really love the song. I can get so technical about why I love it and everything. Like, it's truly amazing. I mean, that the vocoder effects in the start. I love the use to silk her voice. I love everything about the production and her voice and the song. Yeah, I was truly amazed by that. I watched last year's Eurovision with all my friends. We rounded up at the house, ordered food in, and watched the whole thing. I wish I could have been there.
Was there any point when you were watching it with your mates last year where you thought, I would like to do this?
Once I heard Amanda's song, I made it a goal to come to Eurovision. I'd always kept Eurovision in high regard. And then last year when I heard Amanda's song, it just really inspired me because it's close to the things that Amanda's song was really close to the type of genre that I really like and love and that expresses me, or was expressing me at least at that period in time that I was listening to the most. So I was like, hey, come on, let's go. So I made it a goal. I checked what the rules were because I was quite young, still 15 then. I checked that you can be in Eurovision. You have to be 16 years old or over on the day of the final. And I said I'm going to submit in October.
What? So when did you turn 16?
October 23rd.
And I guess you're making history because you're probably Greece's youngest ever competitor.
Yeah.
You mentioned that your dad's Danish. So you are one of these artists this year that where you've got basically support potentially from two countries. It's brilliant.
Potentially, yeah, yeah. That would be really, really great if we have Denmark behind our backs. That'd be amazing. I mean, I was born and raised in Greece. My mother's Greek. My beautiful mother's Greek. I was born and raised here, but we've been traveling to Denmark in the summers, sometimes on Christmas.
So you mentioned that you saw Ed Sheeran, and he's the only person that you've seen live.
But at that live, the two people who were opening up are also artists I love. It was James Bay and it was Zara Larsson. Zara Larsson is quite cool, but James Bay was one of my favorites.
Dare I say this as well, Rosa Lynn, who performed for Armenia last year, is opening up for Ed Sheeran this year. You know, it's kind of, it gives you a little hint into what Eurovision can do for an artist or a person.
I hope what happened to Rosa Lynn happens to more artists this year. Knock on wood for me as well. And yeah, just hoping for the best, trying to do the best for everyone.
How much experience do you have with a live audience, or how are you preparing for that big stadium and that big an audience?
I've never been to a huge audience like will be in Eurovision. The biggest audience I played for is about 400-500 people, but never alone and never my own show. So Eurovision is going to be the first experience for me there. Just focus. I need to, even when I'm on stage, you need to focus on what you're doing so that you give it out to the public. I'm going to be there trying to express my song, and hopefully that emotion comes across. I kind of have to forget about the audience to remember the audience for it to go to the audience. It's kind of a small paradox there because I need to forget about them, so I forget about what they think, so that I can bring my energy out to them.
It's almost like you have to take yourself back to when you were 14 and when you first wrote the song and kind of channel that vibe and that feeling, because that's going to be authenticity there, isn't it? Like when you first like wrote the song.
And I believe that that's the number one thing that comes across to people. It's authenticity, it's vulnerability and honesty. It's not just some sad song you picked up at the park and said, hey, I'm going to sing this. It's like, this is something I wrote about and that I hope can express other people as well. And I hope they can feel the message of the song, and that's exactly what I'm going to do on stage. I'm going to go to that place where I was when I was 14 writing the song.
Victor, what do you do to chill out? Because, you know, we've spoken to Luke Black from Serbia. He is a massive video gamer. Andrew Lambrou from Cyprus, or from Australia, representing Cyprus. He loves a bit of basketball, so he likes the active stuff.
One of my favorite things to do is swim. So just jump in the sea or jump in the pool, straight in. I'm a summer Greek boy. Put the swimsuit on, start jumping in. I was just in the pool before I came. My hair's a little bit wet still. So yeah, that's definitely one of the number one things I do. Another thing I do is boxing, but I'm not allowed to do it now before Eurovision, because it tenses up my neck, it tenses up my throat. So and in general for vocal techniques, that's not good. But boxing is definitely number one.
Well, no, you've got to protect these vocal cords. You've got to protect this neck, because that's going to be your secret weapon for the next couple of weeks. You've got to keep that intact. Have fun and channel everything that you've just said in this interview. And we can't wait to meet you in person. So good luck, Victor.
Thank you. Can't wait to meet you too. Thank you so, so, so much.
I told you, didn't I? Such a maturity, like way beyond his 16 years. And we're going to go to someone who founded their act when Victor was just 1 year old, because Germany's Lord of the Lost began in 2007. Victor was born in 2006. Lord of the Lost were set up by Chris Harms in Hamburg in Germany, and the rest of the band are Klaas, Garrod, Pi and Nicholas, and they're going to Liverpool with Blood and Glitter. It's a big song, it's a big performance, and it is a Visual Feast. They wear heels well, and they're adding a bit of glam metal rock to this year's contest. I'm going to let you into a little secret on the podcast. I actually caught up with Chris, the frontman, a couple of weeks ago because the band had to fly halfway across the world for a tour that was already booked in Latin America. So they've put their Eurovision journey and experience on hold. They got everything ready, went on tour, and then they will come to Liverpool. Such is the life of an international rock band. So it is over to Chris from Lord of the Lost. Chris, we are so close to Liverpool. It's round the corner. How are you enjoying this Eurovision theme park ride so far?
Yeah, it's so many new things. The thing for us is before we applied for Eurovision, we had this tour planned. And for all the things we were able to prepare until now, we are done by now. So this is why we did so much work and all the preparations and all the staging and all the clothing and pyro and lights and all that we could have done. We did it until actually this morning. And now we're done with pre-Liverpool preps, do the tour, enjoy Amsterdam tomorrow. And then we go to Liverpool.
That's very organized of you to get all of your Eurovision. It's like people that do their homework very early and don't leave it to the last minute. It's all sorted and you can go and enjoy, I guess, the Latin America tour.
Yeah, but we are a very organized band. This is maybe the most German thing about us. We're like super, we're always in time. You can rely on us for like everything we have to do and every date we have to go to. So we made a big, big, big timetable from day one when it was clear that we're going to go to Liverpool. So this really, it's hard work first, but this really helps me enjoying because I know, as you said, I've done my homework. I can't tell you how much I'm in love with Google Sheets and statistics and numbers. And I love it. It's, my calendar always looks like a rainbow because I have like different colors for everything. I even write in my calendar from when to when I'm sleeping. Juggling a musical career and a family and my production and songwriting jobs in the studio for other artists, that's a challenge. And now with Eurovision on top, it was like, whoa, okay, I need to make 90% space for Eurovision. And now you have like, it's like so many tiny colorful time windows, but I look at it and I'm like, yeah, I like it that way. I'd be so sad if it would be like just white and empty, you know.
Yeah, it must be so satisfying. And I love that you have a color for sleep. You have sleep blocked out.
It's actually black. The color for sleep is black.
I wouldn't expect anything less, of course. Yeah. So rewinding a little bit, when was the point that you decided to enter or try to get to Eurovision? Was it just an overnight spur of the moment thing? Or was it something that you'd always thought, that looks like something we want to do?
I think there were different points in my life. The first time maybe was in 1986. Before I knew that you can actually apply there, I was in the right age where I wasn't just standing in front of TV like wondering like, wow, what is this? I actually understood that it's something like people can go to. But this world of stars seemed like something outer worldly, which a regular person could never reach. But I think in a way I kind of decided I want to go there. But, you know, I was like 6 years old or something. And then for like when I started my musical career, when I was 18, like in the late 90s, you know, my musical career as a band artist, not as a classical cello player, which I was as a when I was a kid, the music that I made like during the first years was just like much too heavy and too complex or too dark and sinister, like, or too angry for even being considered for Eurovision. And when I was in my early 20s, I kind of lost sight of it. It wasn't, you know, when you leave home and it wasn't cool anymore. And then Lordi came in 2006. It's like, okay, okay, that's still Eurovision, right? Okay. And then it got interesting. And then I think the first time I sent an application 2013. My self-esteem as a singer was big enough to say, okay, let's try. And we had songs that were, let's say, enough pop to go there, because you know we're not the typical metal band. We don't have like all the time. We have like pop music structures. And I think from that year on, it was an annual thing. Let's just try.
You didn't take no for an answer. It's a bucket list moment for you and
the
band.
Yeah, it's a bucket list moment. In the first years, it was just yeah, no, and we didn't know why. But it was never an option for me to change anything just for Eurovision. Neither visuals nor song structures or heaviness or whatever, because the main thing for me is to be authentic as an artist. That means like Eurovision has to say yes to us as we are. That's the only way that we are good. Germany didn't really get far with radio-friendly pop music during the last years, maybe except for 2018. So they were looking for alternatives, and we seem to be the alternative this year.
You are a visual feast. Should we call it that? You are not going to be hard to spot.
Yeah, maybe not right now, but
No. Yeah, right now for podcast sake, we are in just a normal hoodie. But
yeah,
on stage, honestly, I think you are probably in the top one or two or three of this year's acts that are maybe the most colourful. Probably take the longest to get ready. Would you say that, maybe?
There's a lot of things going on with all the glitter, but still, this kind of makeup is still rough in a way. Actually, we can get ready in less than an hour.
Where's the strangest place that you've found glitter after clearing up?
Every shirt of mine has glitter somewhere. It's like when it's in the washing machine, it's too late.
Lord of the Lost is your baby. You are the brainchild. How are the band feeling right now about Eurovision? And is everyone a Eurovision fan in the band?
I wouldn't say that everyone was like a fan all his life. I'm not even sure if I should call myself a fan. But we've all been enthusiasts all our lives, maybe at different parts. Some watched it for the first time when Lordi came. But especially during the last years, we followed it a lot, because we were always like, if there's an event on this world which is about diversity, that it's a Eurovision Song Contest. And that means it has to be about musical diversity as well, because it's called Eurovision Song Contest, not Eurovision Pop Contest. So we were always so happy to see alternative genres in it. And I don't necessarily mean just rock and metal. I mean like everything which is a little bit outside the box.
Where else would you get techno flamenco from Spain? You get a little bit of Schlager rap and rock from Finland. Yeah. You get glam rock metal from Germany. It's like the only place that could happen is the Eurovision Song Contest.
Yeah, and isn't that sad, actually? Because, you know, when I look at festival lineups, I'm always like, okay, things get open much more, and music is so much about crossover during the last couple of years, or maybe two decades. But sometimes I wish, if you look at a festival like Glastonbury, of course you have all genres there, but there's like 1,000 stages, you know. But sometimes I look at like normal sized festivals, and I'm like, why is there no festival for me? Because a festival for me would mean I have like pop, I have rock, metal, even Schlager, rap, whatever, because, you know, I'm fascinated by so many genres, and maybe this is why Eurovision is the perfect place for me. I know we're kind of a little like an outsider, because we're like maybe one of the bands who are least normal for what people connect with Eurovision, but at the same time, I don't even feel like I don't belong there, because I totally belong in this musical world of diversity.
You have toured with lots of people, Iron Maiden for one. What is it like performing to a gigantic crowd?
Wow, it's amazing. But it's always a difference whose crowd it is. You know, when we played with Maiden for the first time, for instance, I was really nervous. We are by far not a typical band who would open for Iron Maiden, because we don't sound like them at all. And so I was like, okay, was that a good idea? And then we played the first show and people, except for some, of course, some always hated, people loved us. And we played with Maiden in 16 countries and they loved us everywhere. So that was great. But it's different if you play a festival, playing a huge crowd does not have to be amazing. It can be very, very risky. We have played, we played in a huge concert hall like maybe 12 years ago, and we were support of a Rammstein tribute band. I don't know why we did that. People just hated us. And so, you know, but I think, you know, for Eurovision, I really don't worry, because like people go there to celebrate Eurovision. They don't go there to just root for one person or artist and boo for the others. I know it's an annual thing where people live up to, they wait for it, and they just having this huge party. It's an environment we're used to. There's 12,000 people. That's nothing new to us. That's not even big. It sounds so arrogant. I'm just like, compared to what we did last year, it's not even big. So I think this will totally help us. When we play the actual final, I think, including all the rehearsals, we have done the whole thing with pyro and lights and everything 8-9 times or something, like very often. And this really helps.
Your heels, right? They are impressive. How high can you go with your heels?
The thing is, on the German finals, I didn't do the heels. I did the boxing boots then. But for Liverpool, I will try the heels again. But it's old school 70s platform boots, which like maybe like that. So it's not stilettos. Because the thing with me is I like my androgynous stage persona, but as soon as I go from platform boots to stilettos, the androgynous thing kind of flips too much towards just looking feminine when I'm walking, and the platform boots are just like the right level in between, because this is how I see my stage persona. It's something in between with bending a little more to the male side, and the stilettos, which I tried sometimes, are bending too much to the female side, and I don't feel 100% safe then there anymore. It's not 100% me. So it's always something interesting for music videos or shoots, like to go full feminine, but for the stage show where I need to feel 100% safe, it's gonna be platform boot. And safe, like on a physical level, because I still need to kind of run and jump around at least a bit. Yeah,
the costumes and the outfits you wear are always incredible. How much input do you have with them?
We have actually 100% input. Like, but it's not always the same person. For Blood and Glitter, we work together actually with a designer. We wanted something new and someone new, and we didn't want to look for things on Amazon or whatever. We wanted to have things like created from scratch, or not from scratch, from our mind actually. But we, it's not only one person all the time. Sometimes we even buy things, and sometimes it's really secondhand stuff mixed with H&M girls fashion mixed with whatever I find at home. So sometimes the trick is to make it look like it's from a designer, but sometimes it's just patchwork.
At this point, you must be excited to get there and just do your thing.
Yeah, we are really. It's like I'm at this point where I'm like, okay, I can't wait anymore, and so we have to do this Mexican and South American thing first, and then I can finally focus on Liverpool for 10 or 11 days straight.
You can vote Full Blood, Full Glitter, Full Eurovision.
Yeah, absolutely.
See, this is why I love chatting to these artists. It's the little things, knowing that Lord of the Lost love a spreadsheet. So organised. The final chat for today comes from someone who, to her friends and family, is known as Ellen. That's her name. But to the Eurovision world, she is brunette. representing Armenia with Future Lover and following in the shoes of last year's huge breakout star, Rosalyn. She's performing second in semi-final two, and as well as being a solo star, Brunette is in two other groups, and like Victor Vernikos, has been musical since she was a kid. Brunette, where are you at the moment, and how are you doing?
I am in Armenia, Yerevan, and I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
You must be so busy right now. Tell us what you are doing with your days.
I was rehearsing for my performance, and yeah, a bit tired, but it's all good.
Are you putting loads of hours into rehearsals right now? Is it morning till night?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm like rehearsing all the time and, you know, working on myself and on my performance.
Take us to the moment when you found out you were going to represent Armenia. Can you remember where you were and the conversation that was had?
I was at the office in public TV, I think. And yeah, I was, you know, a little happy and also a little, you know, nervous about that.
Take us back to when you were a child. I understand you were doing music from a really, really young age.
Yes. At the age of like 4, I'm like singing and doing a concerts, little concerts, you know. And yeah, my mother realized that I have, you know, some skills, musical skills, and she took me to some music class.
Who were you singing? Who were your musical influences?
I really love Rihanna. She's like my idol kind of thing, you know. She really performs amazing, and I think the stage, it loves her. And yeah, you can feel it from her energy. And that's why I really love her. And she's like my idol.
You know, when you see yourself as an artist on that stage, do you draw inspiration from a lot of these powerful singers and powerful figures?
The way that like they perform, it's like really gives me a motivation, you know. I see them moving and, you know, enjoying all of that performance. And it's really, you know, and it gets excited. It gives me like chills and goosebumps and this, you know, this good thing.
We see that in the video for Future Lover, especially when you're between the two big bells. Yeah. You know, we can sit like, did you enjoy making that video?
Yes, I was really enjoying it. It was a bit hard, to be honest. It's like, I was like really exhausted, but it pays. it's a really good experience.
I understand, like, as well as you singing solo, you're also part of a band and also part of another group. You have lots of different projects, don't you? Can you talk about Project 12?
Project 12 is a resident band of Club 12 in Yerevan. It's like the most jazz and really good atmosphere club in Yerevan. And yeah, I'm a part of that group and with my friends. And I really enjoy performing there because, you know, it's it's something that really, you're like enjoying it and not thinking that you are getting, you improving, you know? And that is really important for me. It helps me a lot to have live performance and not to be nervous about that. And yeah, just enjoy the performance.
So it gives you experience of singing in a really non-pressured environment. It's where you can just enjoy being on stage.
Yes, and with my friends, and they are really talented as well, and we're like really bonding.
What do they think of you going to Eurovision? What did they say?
They are really excited. Also, my friend who is a part of our group Project 12, Jean, he's my choreography teacher, or you know, yeah, and we do dance classes. together, and she is, you know, a part of our team in Eurovision this year. So it's really helping to have friends around in this difficult and, you know, cool situation.
So last year, Rosa Lynn sang for Armenia, and she's just gone crazy. She's everywhere around the world. What did it mean to see her success?
First of all, Rosa's my friend, and we knew each other before that. And I am really proud of her. She's like slaying it. And I'm like really happy to see her. I'm really happy that she made such a huge career, and it's like really, you know, touches my heart. I'm really proud of her. The advice that she gave me was that I need to enjoy every moment and not to be stressed about anything.
It's been a great year for Armenia because it hosted Junior Eurovision as well.
Yes, I was, to be honest, I was in jury group, a member in Junior Eurovision, and it was really amazing. The show was amazing. I'm really proud of my country, you know.
When you get to Liverpool, what's going to be your focus? Like, how do you get into the zone?
I love when I'm around with my, you know, friends and, you know, my beloved ones. But I do love, before my performing, to be by myself just for an hour or so, you know. Take a few deep breaths and realize what is going on. And just find my inner peace to really enjoy it and do not be stressed of anything, and yeah, just focusing, you know, that helps a lot to focusing.
I like that. I like the inner peace thing. I like being, you know, concentrating and having a bit of calm, because everything else is so energetic, isn't it? And Eurovision is so energetic. So finding those little tiny bits of calm are really, really important. Mm-hmm. It's the classic question. Do you have a favorite Eurovision song of all time, or one that's really impressed you?
My favorite Eurovision song is Shundi el day pergunda por mi deixa vivi para te amar. It's the Salvador Sobral who won 2000 in 2017. Yeah.
Yeah, for Portugal. You are the first person who's sung their favourite entry, which I love. So thank you. Future Lover is the song representing Armenia. And we can't wait to see what's on that stage. So thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you to Brunette, and thanks to Chris from Lord of the Lost, Victor Vernikos from Greece, and to the United Kingdom's May Muller. We are back soon with more, and in the next episode, we're going to be doing a little rewind. We're speaking to two Eurovision icons who competed exactly 10 years ago. You will find out very soon who they are, but until then, auf Wiedersehen.